Good morning. How are you doing? Did he have to show pictures of me when I was so skinny? Come on, Dad. Just to remind you, he used to be skinny. Well, I'm Garrett Huxford. I look like my dad, except I have hair. And hey, that's not fake, hey, guys. Come on, don't laugh at my dad's bald spot. Now, I would like to say welcome to Compassion Christian Church. Welcome to those visiting us on the web and at our campuses around town. I am Garrett, and some of y'all may know me, some of you may not know me. The way my family typically gets introduced places is my mom will go, "This is Cam. He's our oldest and best, and he's in a band. He travels the world playing music, and he's amazing. And this is Harrison. We actually like him. He's hired at this church. And this is Garrett. He can reach things on the top shelf." So that's me. That's a joke, guys. My shelves are really tall at home. But then I named my daughter Sarah, so I win, guys. So I win all things Huxford. When I was in middle school, some movies came out, and there are movies based off the books, The Lord of the Rings. Anybody seen them? Anybody? Yeah. A whistle. All right. Good. And J.R.R. Tolkien wrote a story called The Hobbit about a man named Bilbo Baggins who found himself swept up in this adventure that had to do with gold and dwarves and dragons that love gold and dragons that hate dwarves and the whole thing. And he had this ring that he found that would turn him invisible, and he had this huge adventure. And then when the adventure was over, he went back to his home, and he had the best stories to tell. He always became the most popular person because everyone wanted to hear the stories he told. And he spent the rest of his life dreaming about the day where he gets to have another adventure. And then there's another story called The Lord of the Rings, where Bilbo Baggins' nephew, actually, gets taken on to a journey himself, an epic tale. An epic tale where he takes this evil device, it's a ring that's powerful that could run the world, and he has to take it across the world. He gets dragged through the pits of hell and through all these battles and all these interactions he has with people so that he could take it back to the place it was made and he can destroy the ring. And that adventure, when that story was over, Frodo's friends all went home. They were all about to go and split ways and go back to their home. And instead of going home, Frodo got put on a boat and he got taken to another land. And I remember watching it as a middle schooler, and I'd ask my dad, why doesn't he just go home? He's done. The world is safe. The world was in danger of falling apart, but now it's safe. He has a place where he can go and hang out with his friends, and he can go to the pub or do whatever he wants to do, whatever hobbits do. And he could just do it. And I said, why not just go home? And my dad said, because he had a wound so deep it'll never heal on earth. There are some stories, there are some tales and adventures that are so meaningful, so profound that they change you forever. And there are some that you live them and then you go back to normal like always. And what's so amazing about Frodo's journey, his epic tale, was that it all traces its way back to a room where he was found himself in a, circled around this ring, and he was surrounded by these mighty soldiers. There were warriors. There was royalty in the room. There was wizards, people with magical powers, all these amazing creatures that he found himself surrounded by. And one of them said, someone has to carry this to the destination so we can destroy it. Who will it be? And all those mighty men stood there and looked around the room. And then you hear the smallest, weakest among them say, I'll do it. And oftentimes, if you hear great stories, if you hear about great lives, if you hear about great adventures and epic tales, what you'll often find out is that that whole thing, that life-changing event, can all be traced back to a single event, a single choice, a choice of courage or hope or love, a choice of loyalty. And when you choose to make that, when you make that choice, it changes everything. When they make that choice, they are different. They are changed from the inside out and forevermore. And the Bible is filled with adventures and epic tales. The Bible is filled with people who do amazing things through God. God uses them and they do amazing things. And then they, as soon as it's done, they go back to normal as if they've never experienced anything from God at all. People like this would be Pharaoh or Xerxes, these huge names in the Bible who God used them to accomplish his will, but they never loved God. They never obeyed God. They never wanted to know what God wanted from them. And so as soon as God was done, they were done. And then there are other people in the Bible who, when they choose to follow God, when they choose to step into what God has for them, they are changed from the inside out and forevermore. And the Bible is riddled with people like the Apostle Paul who say, my former life was basically nothing compared to what I now know in Jesus Christ. And what you find out when you read the Bible is that God works with some people, but he works in other people. He works with some people. I will use you to accomplish a goal. But with other people, I will work in you. I will shape you. I will mature you. I will build you into something new and different and better than what you've ever known before. And the question is, if God has the ability to work with people, but also work in people, why does he do two different things? Why does he discriminate? Why does he go, okay, I'm going to work with you, but I'm going to shape you. I'm going to work in you. Why do you do that? And at some point, the Bible tells us. God at some point tipped his hand. He says, this is how I choose who I will work with, and this is how I choose who I will work in. In 2 Chronicles chapter 16, verse 9 says this, the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless towards him. Why does he choose? Because he's going all over the world. He's searching high and low. He's searching over the mountains and through the valleys and over the river and the grandma's house. He's searching everywhere. And he's looking for someone who's willing to be used by God. And when he finds that person, he says, I'm going to give you strong support. The reason he has to choose whether or not he's going to work with you or work in you is because not everybody is willing to let God work in them. And the Bible, because of that, is filled with people who God works with but not in. And the reason is because with the call of God, with the life that Jesus has for us, it does come with pain. It comes with hardship, it comes with bereavement and sacrifice and loss, it does. It is a hard thing to do. And this is why G.K. Chesterton said, Christianity has not been tried and found wanting, but rather it's been found difficult, and so we don't give it a shot. We don't try it. We hear, God can work in you. But then we also hear, but it comes with a lot of hard work. And so we're going to be looking at two books of the Bible today, the book of Judges. And the book of Judges is filled with adventure. It is filled with excitement and crazy people. It is filled with the coolest people you'll ever know. If you thought your quarterback was cool in your high school, you don't even know what to expect now, because these guys blow them out of the water, all right? And so there's this guy in Judges called Shamgar. He's this guy who had a farming tool called an ox goad. It was a double-edged thing. On one side, it had a spike that you would poke your ox with to make him go. And on the other end, it had a little blade that you'd chop the clay or dirt off the plow to allow it to move. And the Bible says, with that double-sided farm tool, Shamgar killed 600 Philistines in battle. That's crazy, right? And that's also the inspiration for Darth Maul's double lightsaber. Right? Judges is filled with these people. Darth Maul is the most biblical character in Star Wars. That's pretty cool. I mean, except for Luke being a Christ figure. But other than that, he's the most Christ, you know, like person. Okay. There's also this guy named Ehud, who's a left-handed assassin. Am I right? And so he sneaks into the fat Moabite king's palace, and he gets into these personal corners, and he goes, hey, tell the king I have a gift for him. And the guy's like, sweet, I like gifts. And he gets in there, and he stabs him in the stomach, and like the whole sword gets, you know, swallowed up by his stomach. It's kind of gross, you know. We know who I would be in that story. The left-handed assassin. Good. We're all on the same page. Good. I'm glad y'all agree with me. There are these crazy stories in the book of Judges. And they include Samson and Gideon and Deborah and all these people you've heard about. And you go, wow, those are all found in the same book. But there's something you have to know about the book of Judges. The book of Judges is one of the darkest periods in Israel's history. The people who lead the nation, I mean, the judges start out okay. But the world is so dark that Israel's stuck in this cycle they can't get out of. They would turn their back on God, which means they would go to sin and they would start worshiping other gods. And then this nation would come in and they would conquer them and they would oppress them for years. And then they'd cry out to God. They'd say, God, you've got to help us. They're oppressing us. And God would raise up this military leader called a judge. And the guy would run the bad guys out of town and they'd have peace for a little while. And then they'd turn their back on God and they'd get oppressed and they'd cry out to God and they'd have a judge, they'd get peace, and there's a cycle over and over. And the judges start out okay, but then they get worse and worse and worse. In fact, there's one judge who even participates in child sacrifice. Now, if you ever read that in the Bible, that's not the Bible condoning child sacrifice. Child sacrifice is absolutely reprehensible to God. It's a clue letting you know exactly how far people have strayed from God. The people who are leading the nation of God, people who are leading the Israel, the people of God, those leaders don't even understand the character of God. Their own God is a foreign idea to them. And you begin to wonder, why is it that these people are leading Israel and none of the Israelites are even batting an eye at it? How are they all okay with the fact that these awful people are leading their nation? And just when you're about to ask that question, the camera of the book of Judges pans out. And it stops focusing on the leaders, the national leaders. And it starts telling you stories about the people. The normal, everyday people of God. And there's a story about a guy who has his own personal temple to some Moabite or some foreign idol. And he holds worship services. And there's this other guy who has his own personal army. And they go on raiding parties. And they burn down innocent cities. And they have all these people who are... And you read through these last chapters of Judges and there's violence and abuse. And you're going, how on earth did this even make it in the Bible? It's because they found a really dark moment in their history. And the reason their national leaders were far from God is because the nation itself was far from God. Now, this is a hypothetical situation. I don't think it's ever happened to us, but can you imagine a time in the political life of America where you thought, are these really the two best people we have to vote for? That hasn't happened to us yet, has it? No, okay. But I think the book of Judges would say, you might need to look at yourself on that question. What is it that we're doing that's allowing that to be what rises to the top? What were the people of Israel doing to be a place where the judges, as crooked as they were what was rising to the top? And as you finish the book of Judges, the last several chapters, there's this refrain that goes on and on and on. You hear it two or three or four times. It says, in those days, there was no king in Israel. And everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That's a pretty bad thing for Americans to hear. Considering our national morality consists of, if it feels good, do it. As long as I'm not hurting nobody, I can do it, right? In those days, there was no king. There was no unifying person. There was no one calling people back to God. And because of it, there was mass chaos, mass violence. And it all started from people doing whatever they thought they wanted to do. Whatever was right in their own eyes. And by the end of the book of Judges, they're at war again. They're fighting. It's constant fighting. Except this time, they're not fighting an outward army. They're not fighting some Moabite or Canaanite group that they're trying to stop oppressing them. They're at a civil war. They're fighting each other. They're burning down each other's cities. They're killing their own people, oppressing their own people. And you realize, this nation doesn't need to be rescued from the world around it. They need to be rescued from themselves. And who can God send to a nation that needs to be rescued from itself? Right? Throughout the book of Judges, you can send a leader, a military leader, and he can save them from outward armies. But what do you send a nation that needs to be saved from itself? The book of Ruth starts this way. In the days when the judges ruled. That tells us all the context in the world, right? We now know exactly what's going on in the life and times of Ruth. What's going on? Well, people are doing whatever they want to do. They're doing whatever's right in their own eyes. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, who Israelites were told not to live among, and he and his wife and his two sons. So, everyone does what they want to do. There's a famine, there's a hardship, there's a trial they're going through, and they go, I don't want to deal with a trial. I don't want to deal with a famine. I'm just going to leave. I'm bailing. I know God told us not to do that. I know God told us not to live among them, not to intermarry with the people around us because they'll take us away from our God and tell us to worship their God. I know all that. But it's hard here. We're leaving. And automatically you see that this family lives just by the same exact rules that everyone else does. They do whatever's right in their own eyes. They do whatever's right in their own eyes. And so they get there and they're living in Moab and they have this dad who can maybe buy land for them and he can get a job and he can provide for them. And then, we don't know why, we don't know how, the dad dies. Naomi, the mom, is left with two sons in a foreign land And she can't have a job. She can't own property. And so she has this bright idea. I'm going to marry my two boys to some people here in Moab so that we can be connected and they can have kids and they'll work on the farm or whatever their plan was, right? And then they marry two Moabites, Orpah and Ruth, and then the two boys die. Don't know why, don't know how. Apparently God didn't think it mattered. And so what do you have? You have a widow who's responsible for two daughters-in-law. And she has no way to provide for them. She has no way to make a better life for them. Back in this time, women were not allowed to own property. They were not allowed to have jobs. They were not allowed to drive if they had cars, you know. They weren't allowed to do any of this stuff, okay? They weren't allowed to, which is why they had to be married. And that is also why the law that God gave Israel made provisions for widows. Your family was supposed to gather around you. Your husband's brothers or his family was allowed to bring you in, and they would even legally marry you to your brother-in-law so that you would be safe. You would be financially secure. You would have a land to your name because you couldn't have it on your own. But where is she? She's not in a world where her religion is in charge. She's not surrounded by her family. She's not surrounded by anyone that gives two thoughts towards widows. And now she's responsible for two other widows. And then she hears one day, the famine is over. Yeah, of course, famines end, right? Y'all do know hardships end, right? Right? Just because it's hard, it doesn't mean you're going to be dealing with that forever. Right? There are things they're called seasons you get into, and then if you endure them, they get better one day, and you go, man, I'm glad I didn't bail during that time. And she bailed, and so she's far away from her homeland. Her homeland has plenty of food, and she goes, okay, I'm going to have to go back. And she starts to go back, and she looks at her two daughters-in-law, and she goes, I have nothing to offer you. You've been kind to me. So just leave, bail, turn your back on me, and maybe you can find a happy life. Because she follows the exact same rules that everyone else in her nation does. Do whatever's right in your own eyes. You know, bad things aren't supposed to happen to good people. You've been nice. Just go. By the way, bad things happen to everybody, good or bad. Good things happen to everybody, good or bad. And so Orpah says, that's a good idea. I'm leaving, because she does whatever is right in her own eyes. And she pretended to be a Christian for a little while. She's no longer a Christian. So we'll call her Oprah to remember who she is. Guys, it was a joke, all right? Come on. Oprah gets you in trouble every time. Okay. And it says that Orpah kissed her mother-in-law and split. But Ruth didn't kiss her. She clung to her. She grabbed a hold of her. She said, I'm not letting go. And I've heard it said that everybody needs someone who will not give up on them and will not give in to them. They will just stick with them. And she says, she looks at Ruth and she said, see, your sister-in-law is gone. She's gone back to her people and to her gods. So return after her. Do what everybody else does. If everyone on earth is doing it, it can't be that bad of a thing to do. You have to understand how deep cultural narratives run. When you hear the words, everyone did what was right in their own eye, that was a non-debatable thing. It just made perfect sense to everybody. Just like for us, when you hear the words, hey, you got to be you. Do whatever makes you happier and is most true to yourself. That is such a baseline cultural narrative to us that when we hear it, even though it's untrue, it makes perfect sense to us because that's how deep cultural narratives run. And so she says, look, just go back. Do whatever you want to do. And this is what Ruth says. But Ruth said, Do not urge me to leave you or return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. And where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried, and may the Lord do so to me, more and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. The NIV says it really clearly. It says, and may the Lord deal with me, may it be ever so severely. Ruth understands the consequences. She understands how important a vow or a promise is. And here's what's amazing. This one promise changes everything. This single act changes everything. The nation of Israel was hanging in the balance. They were burning themselves down. They were trying to destroy themselves. And what God did was he searched high and low across the land looking for a single heart that was going to be obedient to him, and he gave strong support to it. He said, there, an immigrant girl, I will use her because there's no one in Israel. And he sees that she's willing to be loyal. And he sees this single act of loyalty, and everything changes. The history of Israel is changed forevermore. And here's the idea. When you put yourself in a position to be used by God, you will be used by God. Does that make sense? When you put yourself in a position to be used by God, God will say, good, that's what I was looking for, and he will use you. And if you're wondering why God works with some people but in others, it's this idea. The people who are willing to be used by God, God works in. And here's how the story goes. The book of Judges is one of the most exciting books on earth to read if you're a guy. The book of Ruth is one of the most exciting books to read if you're a girl. And kind of boring for guys, okay? It's a love story, all right? And so, I'm just joking, it's a beautiful story. But here's the deal. And so what happens is she goes, and it's like just this barley season, so people are harvesting stuff, and she meets this guy named Boaz, small business owner, has his own land, has people working for him. And they fall in love. They get married. They have a child. And then they allow Naomi to take care of the child because of all of her kids were taken from her in a tragic way. And the end of Ruth says, then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. They named him Obed. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David. Do you know who David is? King David? Sling David? Front of your bulletin, David? Right? David, the worshiping king, the guy that wrote most of the Psalms. The guy who, the one king in human history who actually liked worshiping something other than himself. King David. The king that was going to unite Israel under one leadership and bring them back to God. The king who was going to make Israel a worshiping nation. The king who was going to make Israel a world power. King David. And when God saw his people burning themselves down, and he said, there's no king here, and everyone's doing whatever they think is right in their own eyes. And he says, who can I send to save these people? He goes and he finds a little immigrant girl. says, I'm going to write a love story through you. But through that love story, I will change Israel's history forever. Also, Ruth makes it in the genealogy of Jesus. So because of this love story, she changes everything in the world forever. And here's what's amazing about this story. Without Jesus, without God, Ruth disappears into obscurity forever. We never hear anything about it ever again. There would be no reason for us to hear about this love story if it were not for Jesus Christ working through a person who's willing to be used by God. But because she is willing to be used by God, God can do amazing things through her. And when you think about all the things that go on in David's life and the kingdom of Israel and all the things in the book of Proverbs and all the things that come from David putting this nation together, and you think that it all traces back to a single act of loyalty, a single act. And things were changed forevermore. Stories like this still happen today, by the way. God's still searching throughout the whole world looking for someone who's willing to be used by him. In 1952, five men moved to Ecuador with the purpose of evangelizing the Indians in the jungles of Ecuador. The most famous among them was Jim Elliot. And they went down there, and their pilot, who flew that beautiful yellow plane, his name was Nate Saint. And when they made contact with the Indians, they got speared to death, just on the riverbed, left there dead. Five men had their whole lives ahead of them, just murdered in cold blood. The pilot, Nate Saint, had a five-year-old son when he died. And 30 years later, Steve Saint was in Western Africa in some Muslim nation, and he was stuck there, and he wanted to explore the countryside, and they said, dude, if you'll die. Like, if that truck breaks down, you'll die. Okay, you can't go out in the desert. You just can't do it. He goes, okay. So he's stuck in this town. Literally, the town's called Timbuktu, okay? We think of Timbuktu as, hey, that's a place way super far away. Those people are like, that's home. So Timbuktu is where he's hanging out. He's stuck in this town. He meets these kids. He says, hey, can you take me to a church? Is there a church somewhere? And they take him to this place. And he meets this guy who's a Christian. And he grew up a Muslim boy. And he goes, so how did you become a Christian? And he's like, well, I stole vegetables from a missionary. He goes, okay, so how did you become a Christian? And he goes, well, the missionary caught me, and he gave me the vegetables anyways, and he also gave me a Bible, and he said, if you memorize some verses from this Bible, I'll give you an ink pen. And so he memorized verses. He started learning the Bible, and he became a Christian. And then his family hated it. His mom actually bought some poison from a sorcerer and put it in his food, and he ate it, and nothing happened to him. And so they kicked him out of the family. They kicked him out of school, kicked him out of the community. And he got brought in by this church. And the missionary gave him a book about Christians who suffered for their faith. And he started reading it. And he said, man, I thought, if people are willing to suffer for their faith, I'm willing to suffer for my faith. And he said, you know what my favorite story in that book was? These five men from America who had anything they could ever want, they decided, I'm going to go to the Stone Age tribe in Ecuador and try to share the gospel with them. And they had guns on them. They could have fought back, but instead they allowed the people to kill them. And Steve Saint's going, oh my goodness. Because when you're a kid, you can't help but question why your dad died. He goes, one of those men was my dad. And so his dad went to Ecuador to share the gospel with South America, and he was encouraging and influencing and empowering people in Western Africa because of the great name of Jesus Christ. And without God, those men disappear into obscurity forever. But with the gospel, with the power of God unto salvation, we know about them today. And their stories are still encouraging people today. And these stories are literally all over the world because God is literally looking all over the world for people who are willing to be used by God. And it is changing lives, it's changing stories everywhere. To the point where my dad went to Poland this year and he had dinner. He sat at a dinner table with a Palestinian man who used to be a sniper for the PLO. He's now a Christian. And on the other side of the dinner table was an Israeli man who's now a Christian minister who, if there was nothing but this world, they would have lived their entire lives as enemies and would have died hating each other. And now they're sharing a meal together with some white guy from South Carolina because of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Brought together as brothers in Christ. But without God, they would have lived their entire lives. Same as always. You can pick them. You can just go through the world. You can find them anywhere. You can pick them. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick one for you. One I'm particularly proud of. And one that I don't even know how the whole story is going to work or how it has worked. I don't know. A couple months ago, my family went to Longhorn. That's the whole story. I just want to tell you all that. I'm just joking. My family went to Longhorns, and the host took us to our table, and we were kind of like, you know, trying to get around the booth. I have my daughter. I'm trying to get her to sit somewhere. And the guy who sat us down at the table, he looks at my mom's purse, her bag, whose brand I don't know what it is because why would I? And he goes, I love that fill-in-the-blank brand bag. I have one just like it. And we're like, cool. Coke, please. And he says, when you're done eating, come over and I'll show you my bag. And I was like, all right, whatever. Okay. And so we get done with the meal, we pay, and I start trying to get my daughter to walk towards the car and not the bathroom and the whole thing. And I look, and I'm, you know, when you're a dad, you're constantly, you know, whatever. And then I look up, and I see my mom making a beeline for that guy. And she goes, I want to see your bag. And I don't know what, if anything, will ever come from that story. But what I do know is that the power of God has the ability to take a single act of kindness and change lives forever. And I was riding home that day, and I'm tired on Sundays. I don't talk very much in the car on the way home, and I was just, normally I'm not thinking about anything, but I drove the entire way home, and I go, Mom, that was epic. If you position yourself in a way that God can use you, He will use you. Because God is searching over the entire earth looking for people who are willing to be used by God. Father, thank you. Thank you for the book of Ruth. Thank you for this girl who was willing to have her life so much harder, so much more difficult. She took the harder trail in order to be loyal and obedient to you. And thank you that you changed everything because of it. I pray that you'll encourage me, everyone in the room today, that you will help us to be more open to what you have for us to do. that we will have a heart that's blameless towards you, that wants to be used by you, and so that when you come our way, you can give us strong support. And in Jesus' name we pray, amen.